Welcome to another episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, June 7. The May issue of the journal Oncology features a really exciting review article titled Primary Focal Therapy for Localized Prostate Cancer, a Review of the Literature. Dr. Sudhir Ishawal, an assistant professor in the Department of Urology at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon, discussed the emergence of focal therapies in the last few years for the treatment of patients with localized prostate cancer. This literature review investigated some of the advantages and drawbacks of various therapeutic models in this space. Dr. Ishawal, thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me on the podcast. You know, I'm really excited to get into your work. So before we get into the ins and outs of the actual piece, could you kind of talk a little bit about the motivation you and your colleagues had to kind of pursue this literature review on focal therapy for localized prostate cancer?
Yeah, so localized prostate cancer treatment is evolving pretty rapidly in the last few years. The impetus for all this started in 2009, I would say, when the USPSTF came out with the recommendation against the PSA screening. And that highlighted the over-treatment and harms these prostate cancer patients have been going through in order to benefit from prostate cancer treatment. So this shifted a focus from cure to managing prostate cancer with minimal side effects. So functional component of prostate cancer treatment became another area of investigation. And one of the things that came out of that is active surveillance of prostate cancer, where we do not treat radically the prostate cancer, but we closely watch it. But, you know, understandably so, patients are anxious, they have a diagnosis of cancer, they do want treatment, but they don't want to lose their sexual function or not have control over their bladder. So, you know, there are some cancers where we, over the years, we've realized that rather than treating the entire or taking the entire organ out, can we treat just the part which is affected by cancer? And in urologic cancers, we do that all the time for kidney cancers, particularly when the kidney cancer lesion is small, that we just take the kidney cancer lesion out and leave the rest of the kidney so that patients don't need to undergo dialysis or progress to a stage where they may need dialysis. So there are a few things that evolved that allowed us to do that. One of the things that had been a key in development is use of MRIs in prostate cancer. Prior to MRIs, we weren't able to detect where the prostate cancer is, and you can't treat what you can't see. And in multi-parametric MRI has allowed us to localize prostate cancer within the prostate. And there are evolution in technology has happened. Nowadays, most of the advanced centers have 3 Tesla MRI, which provide anatomical details of the prostate as well as where the prostate cancer is. In addition to that, biological understanding of prostate cancer has also evolved. And what we found is not all prostate cancer lesions within the prostate are the driver of mutations or like metastasis. What that means is there might be 2 lesions in the prostate, and one is small and one is a dominant lesion. And what we found from our studies that the dominant index lesion is what drives metastasis in most of the prostate cancer patients. So what if we just treat this index of dominant lesion, and that would allow patients to maintain their sexual function as well as keep the continence. And it would prevent a lot of patients from jumping from active surveillance to radical treatment, where we were just closely watching. Because if somebody is anxious and they want some kind of a treatment, even for their low-risk cancer, we could go ahead and treat that lesion with the one of these focal therapy treatments, and that would reassure patients as well as physicians treating them.
Right. And so a main component, and I would say the emphasis of this, is a review of the existing literature. And I really want to dive into that specifically. And if we did that and we touched on everything that you looked at, we'd probably be here all day. So if you could highlight maybe one or two of the pieces of literature that you and your colleagues reviewed, maybe focusing on, you know, how they kind of shifted your conclusions, or really kind of the most important ones that you found when you were looking for you know, corresponding literature.
Yeah, so more recently, there are several treatment modalities have come out in this space. And as a urologist, you know, we hear about different ways of treatment, but we did not know which one is superior, which one is doing a better job, which one is fit for which patient. So my co-authors and I wanted to really look at like the data behind all of them and compare against, you know, each one of them and see which one has better outcomes. Right. There are no randomized trials between the forms of focal therapy treatments. And it's not like one should fit all sizes. It's like different treatment modalities may be better suited for different patients. And if I have to highlight more recent advances, I would say NanoKnife is one of the treatment modality after review, which we found would be suitable for majority of patients. It hasn't been in widespread use in America yet, but in Australia, there are several centers that have been using NanoKnife. What it does is it sends micro pulses of electric current through the prostate cancer cells, and that causes irreversible electroporation. But it also has a tendency of sparing nerves and vessels through that tissue, so it does not cause any nerve damage. And those nerves are important for sexual function control as well as urinary continence. Furthermore, if there are lesions which are more anterior or close to apex, which had been a challenge with thermal forms of therapy such as HIFU or cryoablation, electroporation does a better job. There is a paper from we looked at from Dr. Stricker in Australia, where even the lesions which are closer to a urethral sphincter, even as close as 3 millimeter, can be treated by irreversible electroporation.
Again, and now looking at the really the meat of the research, you and your colleagues kind of include maybe a half dozen or so treatment modalities that are kind of in use right now or being investigated. I was hoping you could expand on one or two of the current available modalities, and really those that you think I would say are most dominant in the field or really most promising in your mind to effectively treat patients with this disease.
Yeah, so HIFU, high intensity focused ultrasound, is most commonly used. And this year, in starting in January 2020, there has been a reimbursement code that has been developed by CMS for high intensity focused ultrasound. What it does is it generates ultrasound waves that targets the lesion, and by thermal damage, by heating the tissue more than 100 degrees Celsius, it ablates that tissue. Prior to this year, a lot of centers had a hurdle of acquiring and treating this, using this modality, and particularly there was no financial benefit because a lot of patients could not afford it out of pocket. But starting this year, since CMS would be reimbursing them, there are a lot more centers would be employing this. And it has been most well studied. It has more than 5 years data showing that it is safe and effective. Up to, there are 10 to 15% infield recurrences, and similarly, there are approximately 15% out of field recurrences. What that means is, there are 15% patients who will fail within the ablation zone, and there are 15% patients will develop either new cancers or have the cancers which will grow outside the ablation zone. So HIFU, I think most of the urologists have a tendency towards that, using that for focal therapy. However, it has certain limitations. It cannot the depth penetration of this ultrasound wave is limited up to 3 to 4 centimeters. And if you are using it transrectally, then anterior zone lesions may not be adequately treated. Similarly, some patients have calcifications in their prostate, and what those calcifications does is they causes dispersion of the ultrasound waves, leading to more failure. So I would say majority of centers would need to have at least like two modalities, one which would work for more so anterior zone lesion, as HIFU would not be adequate for those patients, or the ones which need a lesion treated closer to their external urethral sphincter. And that's where I think irreversible electroporation works, where you could use irreversible electroporation and put those needles on the anterior zone or close to apex of the prostate and ablate those lesions. Some centers prior to irreversible electroporation had been using cryotherapy. And part of the reason thing cryotherapy was being used is because it was being reimbursable by CMS for a long period of time. But cryotherapy, it has a lot of side effects associated with it. The reason it has fallen out of favor is because of development of fistulas and damage it does to surrounding structure. So I think in future it will its use will decrease, and irreversible electroporation treatment would increase. One of the newer treatment modality, which is called TULSA-PRO, has been tried in Canada, but hasn't. It has been recently looked upon by FDA for approval. And what it does, it does similar thing what HIFU does transrectally, but it does transurethrally, where you can do the ultrasound ablation from the urethra and do a real-time monitoring of that ablation zone. And I think in coming times, it may overtake HIFU.
Right. I mean, if I understand it correctly, a big component of this piece is kind of discussing the advantages and drawbacks of these different modalities and you know, how they're impacting patients. So with that in mind, you know, just the overarching area of localized prostate cancer, what do you think is really the main component or point of emphasis that needs to be addressed with some of these treatment modalities for patients? You know, were there any kind of consistencies that you saw within the drawbacks from these treatment modalities that you think should really be the focus of research moving forward?
Yeah, the focus would be, can we select those patients who are going to respond to focal therapy or people who would need more of a radical treatment to begin with? As I said, there are 15% patient fails within the ablation zone and 15% outside. So we'll need biomarkers who can select those patients. The application of biomarkers so far, which are out in commercial space, has been to select patients for radical treatment from the active surveillance. Can we use biomarkers to select patients who would be better suited for focal therapy? That is one of the emerging questions that need to be done. And then going forward, we need to compare these treatment modalities against each other. You know, we do understand because of these small studies, looking at these small numbers, which patients fail these therapies and may need like retreatments. But if we look at prostate cancer is a slow growing cancer compared to other kind of cancers. Does the treatment with focal treatment make a difference in their survival? I tell my patients typically, I want to offer you a treatment if it's going to make you live better or live longer. You know, we can see that focal treatment may allow them to live better because of less side effects, but can it also allow them to live longer? Are those patients not going to have metastatic disease or need radical treatment within few years after focal treatment?
Right, absolutely. And that makes total sense. So lastly, to kind of summarize this piece, is there anything that I haven't asked about that you think is really important to share or that you would really like to emphasize about your review of the literature?
So a review of the literature, I would say some of the things which we need to, as a focal therapy community, need to develop is have a specific registries where everybody's follows the same inclusion-exclusion criteria so that we can compare apples against apples and not compare, you know, different risks, because that decreases the generalizability of the research findings and comparison. But also for our patients, we owe it to them that we need to look at the long-term outcomes, and rather than just looking at 1 or 2 year outcomes, and looking at long-term picture and see how those patients do. And be open to innovation, and just because we've invested in a technology, if it's not working out for our patient, we should adopt and change to the newer modalities such as NanoKnife for focal ultrasound.
Great. Well, Dr. Ishwal, those are all the questions I had for you. Thank you so much for your time. I'm really excited for people to, you know, read your work in the latest issue of the Journal of Oncology and really get to learn more of exactly what you're talking about. So thank you so much for the insight.
Thanks, Matthew.
The perspective for this article was written by Dr. Thomas Pulisic, a professor of surgery urology and director of focal therapy at the Duke Cancer Center, Duke Medical Center in Durham, North Carolina. Pulisic described the response he wrote to this article titled, "Prostate Cancer Focal Therapy Has Made Great Strides and the Future Remains Bright." He touched on all aspects of focal therapy, including the history, potential hurdles, and patient selection and surveillance, among other things. Dr. Pulisic, thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me about this article from the journal entitled Primary Focal Therapy for Localized Prostate Cancer. I was really hoping to just start with your perspective piece that you wrote for the journal and really the history of focal therapies. You mentioned that the last two decades, focal therapies have slowly been adapted and introduced into treatment. So what have they done to really improve the treatment of prostate cancer?
Well, the treatment of prostate cancer has been evolving over the last few decades. There's been a lot of new instrumentation in surgery, particularly the robot. And there's been changes in some of the radiation technologies and techniques that I've used as well. Recently, many men who have low-risk prostate cancer have opted for active surveillance, which is a non-treatment or a monitoring type program where we don't feel that the cancer is aggressive enough to warrant treatment, or said another way, that the side effects of treatment may be worse than living with the disease. I think throughout this time, since the early 2000s, the idea of partial gland ablation or focal therapy has come of its age. We've seen in a number of other organ systems and cancers where we just treat or surgically remove the cancer and not the entire organ. So for example, with kidney cancer, if there's a small tumor, we try to remove just the tumor and spare the rest of the kidney. We see this also in thyroid disease. We see this in breast cancer. You have the lumpectomy, and you see this in many other organ systems, such as the liver. We would just remove the cancerous growth as well. I think prostate has been probably the last bastion for the solid organ, because many of the tumors are very, very small. You can't really see them by the human eye. And also, prostate cancers tend to be multifocal. So for a prostate cancer to be treated in an organ-sparing effort has been very challenging over the years. And that's why it's one of the last organ systems to undergo focal therapy.
You mentioned this point about the tumors being pretty small, and you write in your perspective here that up to 15% of tumors are MRI invisible. And that kind of brings me to this idea of multi-parametric MRI that you bring up. I was hoping to just get your kind of insight on what this does for patient selection and surveillance.
Well, multi-parametric MRI for prostate diseases has been a game changer. It's really our very first imaging modality where we can see some of these tumors within the prostate. You typically can't see them using conventional imaging or CAT scan technologies. Now, in a way, MRI doesn't see all the tumors. It tends to see either the larger prostate cancer tumors or the more aggressive ones. So the good and the bad with that is that if you have a small or an indolent cancer, MRI may not see it. And that may be good because you don't want to undergo treatment if it doesn't require it. But for some of the more aggressive tumors or the larger ones, MRI is very likely to find those. And then once you see them, you can then direct a needle into those tumors, obtain your tissue sample. And once you know it's cancer, then you can plan for various treatment options. Now, a common question that men ask nowadays is this. They say, well, if you can see the tumor on MRI, and then you can put a needle in it to biopsy, why can't you then go back and treat it in the same fashion? In other words, put a treatment needle into that area and then treat that only and not remove the entire prostate. Right. So that's the concept for image-targeted focal therapy, where we just go in and with one of a various number of devices we have, ablate the tumor.
So it sounds like MRI was able to address a problem or two in the area in treating prostate cancer. I was wondering what problems or hurdles that really loom large in the treatment of prostate cancer, and maybe how focal therapy can help to address those and close the gap with them.
Well, focal therapy is just one of the potential treatments in an armamentarium or a tool chest that the urologist has for prostate cancer. I don't think it's going to be the solution for all prostate cancers. Clearly, the ones that are more aggressive are going to require more aggressive approaches, such as radiation or surgery, and sometimes immuno or special systemic medications. But it definitely fills the gap between what we call the indolent ones, or the ones that are not aggressive that can be monitored, and the ones that are getting to be aggressive, where you could potentially see them on MRI, then ablate them or treat them, and then continue to follow the patient. This would be a means to destroy the cancer in a very focused fashion and maintain a man's quality of life. Because one of the side effects of whole gland or radical treatments is loss of urinary control or incontinence, and also loss of sexual function for men.
So you kind of touch on this idea that it's really just a tool in the toolbox. When you write, it's important to be mindful that patient and tumor selection remain the cornerstone of successful partial gland ablation. So with that, what kind of role do you see partial gland ablation playing in the treatment of prostate cancer over the next 5 to 10 years? Do you see a very specific kind of role for it, or are there kind of lingering ideas or places it can be applied?
Yes, I do see a role. So I would first say that in order to pick up these early tumors, you have to have quality imaging and be screening for them. Mm-hmm. You know, some countries may not have a role for focal therapy. In other words, if they're not checking or detecting cancers at an early stage, then you're not going to have a role for image-guided targeted ablation.
Sure.
But if you have a kind of an advanced society where men are undergoing screening for prostate cancer and you detect these early, then you get the benefit of intervening with these cancers in a minimally invasive fashion, again, trying to preserve a man's quality of life without having to resort to some of the radical treatments that we offer currently for prostate cancer.
Right, and so to sum things up, lastly, is there anything that I haven't asked about regarding focal therapy or the treatment of prostate cancer that you think is really important to emphasize right now?
I think it's important that when one treats prostate cancer, that they cover the spectrum. Some men need no treatment. In other words, monitoring is sufficient. Whereas with other men, you know, they have very aggressive cancers. And as you know, prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American men. So we do know that prostate cancer is the most common solid tumor in men, and it's the second leading cause of death. So any kind of prostate cancer treatment has to be able to span the continuum of having very unaggressive type of disease to very aggressive that may end up killing you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you download your podcasts. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review to tell us what you think and what you want to hear more about going into the summer. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, you can visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.